The New Brunswick Health Council was created in 2008. It has a what we call a dual mandate. So one part of its mandate is to report publicly on the performance of the health system. So looking at the state of population health, the state of health service quality. And the other part of its mandate is to engage citizens in the improvement of health service quality. So every year since then, we've been working on those two aspects. And today, the council has been able to prepare and organize information, either pertaining to the health of the population, the quality of service, and make this available through its website. And from time to time, we highlight our findings through media and other sources.
All right. So the council has released some information to help New Brunswickers prepare for these consultations on healthcare reform that are starting on Thursday. Here in Sackville, we are going to be the first community to have the first meeting. Wanted to ask, one of the patterns that you've identified in some of the research that you've been putting out is a slight drop in life expectancy at birth, mm-hmm. starting in 2013 after decades of consistent increases. Mm-hmm. What can you tell me? What do we know about why these recent declines are happening?
The most important element that we found looking at that is when we look at what we call avoidable deaths. So these are measured as deaths that occur before the age of 75. And we look at the causes of those deaths. And many of the top 10 causes of death are linked to causes that are preventable, that are linked to physical activity, eating habits, and so forth. So it does speak to, as a province, needing to do a much better job at everything pertaining to prevention and health promotion. So it goes from, from our health services perspective, and one of the elements that I will be contributing to those consultations is talking about what we call health determinants. So health services and health service quality are one determinant, but it's estimated that it weighs about 10% on the health of a population. Meanwhile, socioeconomic factors are 40%, health behaviors are 40%, and when you look at those health behaviors, they, in many ways, they're what contributes to the onset of these preventable conditions that cause loss of life before the age of 75.
What kind of preventable conditions are we talking about?
So when we look at the top 10 causes of death, and if we look particularly to Zone 1, for example, number one is lung cancer, and lung cancer is categorized as being preventable. We know smoking, its impact, exposure to radon is another factor that's not necessarily well known about lung cancer. Suicide is a preventable cause. It comes into number four in Zone 1. Where we have 1.2 loss of life per 10,000. Then we have COPD, the acronym is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. So it's essentially pulmonary disease, so short of breath, chronic pulmonary diseases. Transport accident is another preventable one, and accidental poisoning comes into number 10. So when you're looking at those types of preventable deaths, you can then think about associated health promotion or disease prevention type of activities. It can go two folds. It's how, on one hand, when it comes to health service quality, how are we maximizing every interaction with health services as an opportunity to either promote healthy behaviors or to manage any conditions that be existent so that there aren't further complications, but also at the community level, and by increasing our awareness of these differences in each zones and so forth, how can this help guide our investments, our efforts? And in the last 10 years, the council has already been exposed to a number of communities in New Brunswick that have leveraged this type of information to help them target priority areas for initiatives. So there are many things that we can do. The key is to be equipped with this type of information so it helps us appreciate where we can have the most benefit for our populations.
Now, on the other side of when you talk about the, you know, declines in life expectancy at birth, the other side of it is that there is also some treatable problems that are happening. So that's more in terms of less like looking at the, you know, how healthy we are as a population, sort of feeding into the healthcare system, treating our problems. But then that's
the more... treatable is really about to prevent a death. It's about timely access to quality care.
Right.
So it's really the key element for the treatable. About 10 years ago, maybe 6 years ago, when we last dove into that type of info, New Brunswick was not doing well compared to the rest of the country on the preventable causes, but was doing relatively well on the treatable side. So, you know, the life and limb type of situation, you need urgent care, our system was relatively good. We've declined over time on treatable. So we've heard from our health system a lot in the last few years, pressures caused by a lack of human resources, for example. So obviously that could be a factor. There's also the issue of an aging population. And with an aging population, we have a small proportion of that population, because aging does not equal illness. A lot of people lead very healthy lives to a very late age. Unfortunately, there's a proportion of our population, for those reasons we're talking about, preventable reasons often, can develop the onset of chronic conditions early. If not well managed, they can develop other chronic conditions. So we know we have a significant proportion of our population that has three or more chronic conditions. And these individuals, they can become what we call high users of services. So in other jurisdictions, we've learned that 1% of the clientele gobbles up about 30% of all spending. So that's because we are, well, their needs are very high, and we're not effective in helping them manage those conditions in such a way to prevent further complications. So that's an important a factor to consider when we're looking at the impact of this usage of healthcare by that part of the population, the impact it can have on other parts of the system, like surgeries, for example. So the more hospital beds that we have occupied by people for preventable types of conditions, the fewer resources are available for those more treatable, those conditions that are treatable.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many benefits to having a healthier population, first and foremost for the benefit of our citizens, but not having or having a too big of a proportion of our population with chronic conditions, for example, does add a lot of pressure on our health system as well.
Is there a connection between, you know, those risk factors, the preventable conditions, and the availability of primary health care in communities, would you say? Like access to doctors or nurse practitioners and things like that?
Well, we look at the state of accessibility, right? So we know that Canada does not compare very well to other countries when it comes to timely access to what's called primary health services. So, and I want to make that distinction. So primary health services is the ability to see a health professional for that first point of care. The reason why I say it that way is that many, many countries, the way services are organized, that is not limited to a family doctor. But Canada has very much built its system around doctors, which explains why in New Brunswick in 2021, when we look at timely access to primary care, we talk about access to a doctor, because we've really built the system around that. New Brunswick does not compare well to Canada on timely access. And what we've learned is if people, there's the issue of those who don't have a family doctor. That's one part of the population. Although on that point, New Brunswick compares fairly favorably to the rest of the country, but it is still a challenge for that part of the population that does not have a family doctor. For those who have a family doctor, there's a proportion of those who cannot have timely access. And when they can't, they tend to go somewhere else. So they'll either go to an after-hours clinic, an emergency room. And when they do that, now, if they do that for sort of an acute condition, something that's go in, get their fixed, may have gotten a prescription, and it's all that they needed, well, then fine. But when you look at that part of the population that's got these chronic conditions, accessing care that way is not effective for them because they're dealing with a new professional each time. The person in front of them doesn't know them well, doesn't necessarily understand their reality, doesn't necessarily know their reality. And an example I'm always provided is for diabetics, for example, who may not mention that they're diabetic, but have gone in or in front of a health professional, a doctor, or saying their feet are hurting or whatnot, but the doctor is never informed that they're diabetic, which is a very important element. When you don't have continuity of care with a provider that knows you well, as a system, we're missing those opportunities in those interactions to strengthen people's understanding of their health conditions, to strengthen their understanding as well of their medicine and what they're for and how they should take it. And when people are well informed on their condition, on their medicines, there's much higher chance that they'll have a successful management of those conditions. Mm-hmm. So when people can't get timely access, it has a negative impact on strengthening that type of understanding in patients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned that Canada is sort of tied into this model where, you know, a doctor, a family doctor is really your key to the whole medical system, unless we're talking emergency services. Like if I get in a car accident, obviously my, mm-hmm. you know, emergency room is going to help me. And I mean, I'm interested in this because, you know, being a Canadian, I just sort of grow up with this reality and
exactly.
that's what's normal. So yeah. There are other ways to organize this?
Well, other systems, Canada started with two decisions. We pay for everything provided by a doctor and everything that's provided by within a hospital walls. And we've essentially evolved around those two elements since the 1960s. In other countries, early on, they've acknowledged other professionals, pharmacists, nurses. So depending on the jurisdictions, your system was built on an acknowledgement of many other professionals. So today in Canada, that contributes to our challenge to try to maximize other roles. And many doctors today will actually speak to the challenge that this poses because they themselves recognize that for some of their patients, the patients would be better served if they were in front of maybe a nutritionist or a social worker, or because the person's need in trying to manage their conditions has got something else to do with after their diagnosis, right? Once they've diagnosed and so on, they may have other types of needs. Mm-hmm. So we have to make that step at one point in the maximization of roles. So yes, it includes better use of nurse practitioners, nurses, other professionals. And it does still include using in an appropriate and proper fashion family doctors as well. There are things that they're better equipped to diagnose than other people, and you would want to make sure that they're present for that. But when we look at the thousands of interactions our systems have with citizens on an ongoing basis, if we evaluate those better, understand those better, it becomes clear that many, many of those interactions that are repeated interactions could be managed by someone else than a doctor. And the end result would actually be better for the patient because the person they'd be talking with is better equipped to help them with their need.
Right. And probably better equipped with those, you know, specific areas of life. Like you mentioned, nutritionists, there could be physiotherapists, there could be all different sort of things.
Sometimes some people have financial hardships, barriers, so a social worker can be of great assistance. in helping them, you know, organize themselves to better manage their condition. So the needs can be quite wide, you know, in scope.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, you've also looked at, the council has also looked at the inequity of the sort of distribution and quality, I guess I'll say, of the healthcare services in New Brunswick. Like community to community, there's radical differences. Can you give me an idea of what you found there?
On variability, the key thing here, well, the first thing is that when we started doing this work, this was not known in New Brunswick. There wasn't organized information that would have enabled us to see this. As our work evolved, we first focused on information we could validate that compared New Brunswick to the rest of the country, and that gave us an appreciation where New Brunswick was not performing as well. Then gradually, we're able to validate information at health zone level. What's interesting today, when I mentioned the word health zone, there's a lot of people who know what a health zone is because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But a year ago, you and I would have spoken, and most people would not have known what a health zone is. But health zones, when we first started organizing information by health zone, we thought, oh my God, like there's differences. Like it really depends on what you're measuring. There isn't a zone that's good at everything or bad at everything. But depending on what you're measuring, it is worth knowing what the results are by zone because there can be a difference. Then, with time, we were able to organize some information at the community levels. And when we say community, what we did was we took the health zones and we divided them up at, you know, community levels. So we got the province divided up in 33 communities. At this level, when we look at the issue, for example, of getting a family doctor appointment within 5 days, okay? So you have Sackville is at 53%. So about 53% of the population can get an appointment in 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the provincial map, and people can look at our website and they'll see the article on variability and they'll see the map, and they'll see that there's a color scheme for the zone. So the darker the color scheme, the worse off that community is. So the worst is Kedgewick-Saint-Quentin at 19.5% of the population who can get an appointment within 5 days. And the best is Perth-Andover, Plaster Rock, Tobik area, which can get where 75% of the population can get an appointment within 5 days. Niigawaq and Alnwick are doing fairly well at 73%. So if you see 19% to 75%, that's quite a large variation, and it really underlines why it's important to consider local realities when we're talking about this issue, because we could be in a community where they're doing actually quite well and their needs may be different, or we could be in a community that's among the worst in the province and it's actually quite urgent that we fix the situation.
Right. Now, 53% is sort of average. It's roughly average for the province, would you say?
It's average.
Yeah.
But I always say this. If 53% can get an appointment in 5 days, it may sound good, but not so good for the 47% who can't.
Right.
No. Right? And what we found is why we used 5 days, because we used 2 days and we used 5 days. Our numbers have shown us that if people can get an appointment within 5 days, they will wait. If it's more than 5 days, that's when they'll say, well, I'll go to the emergency room or an after-hours clinic or somewhere else. So that's why we came up with, you know, the 5 days measurement, saying, well, if we can start with improving our results around 5 days, if the whole province could be at 75% or more, that would be a good first step.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, we should say like a larger percentage of people, that's the speed at which you can get an appointment, but more people than that have a family doctor, but it's just a case of how quickly could you actually get in to see that doctor? It really makes
exactly.
a big difference. Yeah.
The vast majority, the almost totality of New Brunswick has a family doctor. It's the ability to have a timely appointment. Also, it's okay sometimes that it'll take 2 weeks if what you're calling for is not urgent. Maybe you're okay for the reason for which you're calling, It's just a regular checkup or something like that, and you're okay waiting 2 weeks or 3 weeks, right? And that's fine. But it's your doctor's office should be equipped to see you in a timely fashion when it is urgent. And many doctors would say they should be able to see you either the same day or at the very least the next day when it is deemed urgent. So when it's not urgent, it's okay that you wait. And you should be okay with waiting. You don't need to go to the ER or whatnot because it's not urgent. So it's not about everybody that calls should be able to see their doctor in 2 days. That would not be reasonable. But for those that need urgent care, what happens is if they can't see their doctor, they end up going somewhere else. And for a portion of those people who have health complications, it has a negative impact on their ability to understand their conditions and manage them.
Mm-hmm. Now, we mentioned Sackville will be the first community heading into a public consultation on Thursday. Mm-hmm. Do you have advice for citizens around here looking to participate in these consultations? How can they sort of, I don't know, maximize their participation?
The key is that they feel comfortable to share their own perspectives. And I think the most important thing is for them to share their perspectives. By experience, what we've seen in, obviously this is not ideal. I mean, our preferred approach is when we can do these things in person. And our past approaches have been to experience this in person. And what we have come to see is that when people participate at these, there's one part of it is what you bring to the conversation. The other part is also hearing from others, hearing the information that's provided. Often people hear things they've never thought of before, and they come out with a new perspective, a new angle. And I think that's important as well. I mean, ideally in society, we need to get better with how we engage communities. We have to move from a process where it's done once every so many years when we're trying to make changes to the system to more of an ongoing process. Our health system does not understand the needs of its communities very well. It's not something it's done very well for the past 60 years. So we need to move to more ongoing conversations. So I think with this round of consultation, it's a key opportunity for citizens to hear perhaps stuff that they may not hear otherwise, which is good, and also to relay what they have in their minds. And some of the stuff they'll hear may influence what they will say as well. But I think as a system, we have to get better at making this more of an ongoing conversation between the community and our health service organizations.
All right. Well, Stéphane Robichaud, thank you so much for speaking with us today. I appreciate your time.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.